So the monster that I have to discuss today is the Eye Drake, and as part of that, that creature is kind of it's created as part of a dream, which we expanded on the episode. But so I want to ask you guys, if you were forced to have a dream about a creature that would then create something similar to an Eye Drake but not be dragon related, what D&D creature would you use? An Eye Drake created but not of a dragon.
So like if a beholder had a dream of another creature.
Yeah.
Honestly, the most terrifying thing that I can think of is a beholder dreaming of a hag.
Oh yeah.
So all of the weirdness and the evil of a hag
Yeah.
with the paranoia and the eye rays of a beholder.
Well, that's awful. That Karina.
I'm either thinking about dragons or undead now. But we already have an undead beholder.
Oh, you know what would be cool is a troll, and every time you cut off an eye stalk, it regrows.
Another one grows.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, or like a hydra, beholder hydra, and you get two eye stalks where one once was. Yeah, that one would be good. You just have to start coming up with new eye rays for it too.
Yeah, there'd have to be a like a list of 40 different eye rays.
And you just
Yeah.
roll on this one.
I'm not sure what my answer to this question would be. Maybe a mimic would be funny, because then they would have beholder characteristics to almost any object, you know? But yeah.
Oh, any object could just grow eye stalks and start shooting eye rays when you least expect it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
I love it.
Or like a gelatinous cube. That would be fun.
That would be pretty good. Some of the oozes, actually,
Yeah.
the different types of oozes would be really good. Yeah.
Welcome to the It's a Mimic podcast, where you never know what you're going to get.
Welcome to another It's a Mimic episode, where we continue our conversation on dragons in Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. I'm Pepperina, and with me today are Terry and Adam, and this episode is called Draconic Creatures, Five Heads Are Better Than One, or Five Eye Stalks, or Four Tentacles?
In this episode of the It's a Mimic podcast, this panel of Dungeon Masters is going to look at three nightmarish creatures that are one part dragon and one part something worse.
Okay, dragons, orcs, and humans are the three most prolific creatures in D&D and tend to create half creatures whenever they mate with another species. Clearly, as we're going to discuss today, dragons are suited to being magically crossed with other kinds of creatures beyond humanoids as well. Is there any other kind of half dragon, half something you'd like to see? So like the flip side of what Terry just asked.
Are we going to roll
Kind
for
of
it?
everything that I want to say, they kind of have something along that lines anyway. Like if you were to say like horse, there's already drakes and dragonels. Close enough. Are we going to edit this so it makes it feel like I came up with my answer really quickly?
Oh yeah. All this dead silence. Let's roll for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as the internet's concerned, I got an answer immediately.
I
got a
immediately.
three.
I got a 19.
I got a 14.
Good luck.
Good luck, Peps.
Good luck.
Oh!
The high roll you never wanted.
I know. Ugh, I always just like that middle line, you know, so someone else can talk while I think.
Going second is the best place to
It's
go.
the best place. It's the best place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what we don't have that's already somewhat dragony, because like I said, like oozes or a gelatinous cube, but we have like the dragon blood ooze, so that's
well,
already
we got fizz bands, so they've done a little bit of everything,
they've
right?
done so many things. Yeah. I'm just rolling through. I'm rolling through creatures in my head, and I'm like, no, we have a Draco Lich. Like Lich, that would be scary. No,
Well,
we have it.
spiders. Half dragon, half giant spider.
Oh God, that would be.
Oh, half dragon, half giant. I mean, I know they're enemies, but like, can you just imagine a giant, like really low intelligent bestial, can't fly, stomping around the ground, just eat like half hill giant?
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost a Tarrasque now that I said that out loud, but
Yeah.
See, there's already something for all of it. They've done it all.
Okay, well, let's see. We've
It's
got
like they've
aberrations.
had this. It's like they've had this same conversation every week for 50 years. What else can we make?
What else? Yeah.
Okay, here's the one we don't have. We don't have any dragons that are part celestial or part fiend.
That's fair.
So something in that range, like...
Mm. Like a half-dragon Solar?
Yeah, or a... I was going to say half-dragon unicorn, but I think that's just a dragon with a horn.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, it's hard. Like, they've covered all the bases on this, right?
We're all like, I wish people could see our thinking faces right now, because we are all like so far in thought.
It's ridiculous because
let me go look at my wall of minis real quick.
trying to smash dragons into different creatures. Like, what's gonna come out? Constructs? That's not gonna. What else we got?
But we have the clockwork dragon, so we have a dragon construct.
You know what we don't have is any hairy dragons, like a dragon mammoth.
No.
Hairy dragons.
Don't have any portal half dragons.
We have the dragon turtle, Terry.
They would be minions. They would be smaller.
Yeah.
Dragon turtles. We do need dragon turtles.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll tell you, another one we don't have is plant dragons.
That's fair.
Like, there'd be like a deep dragon comes dragon. Close with like the fungus breath, but like,
yeah,
having like a weird mushroom dragon would be really neat.
Yeah, I don't know if I like mushroom dragon. That feels too far. Can you imagine running into that? I'd rather get killed by anything else. What'd you get killed by? The mushroom dragon.
Somebody just sent me today a thing that's a seal dragon. I'll have to send it to you guys. It's pretty cute.
We're doing too much.
Okay, well, let's get into an info break so we can move on to the creatures themselves.
We have previously covered quite a bit in our discussion on dragons in 5th edition. For all those episodes and more, you can follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and dozens of other podcast apps. And if you'd like to support us, you can donate through the website, check our store, or join our Patreon and get access to other episodes and series. If you'd like to pay for some ad space on It's a Mimic, or just shout out to a friend, please reach out to us through our email and website that are listed in the show notes below.
This week on It's a Mimic, we have an episode of Bring Out Your Undead on Wednesday, where the ladies look at some special kinds of ghosts that are good alternatives to the standard stat block. On Thursday, on the Patreon, the Homebrew Pantheon series looks into demigods and where they fit into the landscape when you're coming up with your own homebrew gods. And then on Friday, the Campaign Builder looks at the difference between empathy and sympathy when eliciting emotional responses from your players. But for now, let's get back to the episode.
All right, so we've each got a creature, just one to cover, so let's roll for it to see who's going first.
15.
17. Saved you, Terry.
Thank 13. You. Oh, in the middle.
All right. Do we like the draconic creatures? Like, we've asked, you know, we had trouble coming up with anything because they've got all of these weird little, like, half-breed dragons. Do we like them? Like, the ones that they came up with so far, everything from, like, drakes to wyverns to the ones today to, like, are we a fan of it?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I named my dog Drake, so.
Yeah. All
right. Just thought you were a fan of Canadian hip-hop artists.
I know him from Degrassi, actually.
Wow. That is impressive.
All right, so my first one today is the Dracohydra. The Dracohydra is exactly what it sounds like. It is a huge-sized monstrosity that resembles Tiamat a little bit. There were some wizards a long time ago that decided that they wanted to try to harness some of Tiamat's power and try to recreate what she had going on. And so they added the magic of chromatic dragons with the blood of a hydra and created a multi-headed draconic monster that can fly and has multiple tails, although that doesn't come up in the stat block. There are 5 tails and a head for each color. And these creatures are, they're lower intelligence. They're not like true dragons. They've got an intelligence of 6, which puts them ahead of hill giants and on par with like dolphins and apes. So they can communicate. They have a full range of emotions, but their communication doesn't include speech or anything, right? So They're right on the cusp of being an intelligent dragon that you can like negotiate with. The problem is what happens is they move into an area and they essentially eat everything because every one of the heads demands its own feast. So they eat everything in the entire region. They just wipe all animal life clean. And then when all the easy kills are gone, it heads over to the nearest civilization or settlement that it can prey upon as well. Once that's been completely obliterated, it moves on to the next thing. We do get a funny little quote from Fizban because most of them have funny little quotes. And it says, I once spent months trying to teach a Dracohydra to perform a 16-bar, 5-part harmony. The singing didn't take, but the image of all its heads wearing their little hats and mustaches I gave them still tickles me to this day.
I love it.
The thing that baffles me about this is that this, like, it's Bahamut in disguise, right?
Yeah.
So they say. It's never been confirmed. I'm just saying I've never seen him in the same room.
Also, he could be Batman. So the final note here in the lore for the Dracohydra is the fact that sometimes the spellcaster that creates them can actually enslave them and keep them obedient to their will. So these can be used as guard dogs as well. But at CR 11, that's a pretty hefty guard dog.
Yeah.
So jumping into the stat block really quickly, we find that it's typically chaotic evil. But I mean, of course it would be, right? It's got a decent AC of 17. The hit points, it has 19 D12 plus 95. That means it's got an average of 218, and that's going to be really important because we're getting into weird Hydra shit in a minute here. Its swim, walking, and flying speed are all 30 feet, and we've got really solid strength and con, and everything else except intelligence is a 12. So intelligence is down there, like I mentioned before. We get dark vision. It understands draconic, but it can't speak. All of this regular dragon nonsense. But then we get into the weird multi-headed bit. So first of all, it has 5 heads, and when one gets cut off, if you don't do 30, if you don't do radiant damage to it, then 2 grow back in its place on the next round. It doesn't necessarily have to be 2 of the color that you just lopped off. It seems to like they sprout randomly. But we also have the fact that if it has more than the 5 original heads, it can't be blinded, charmed, deafened, frightened, stunned, or knocked unconscious. So what you need to do is you need to kill all of its heads or just whittle away at its hit points as quickly as possible. If it takes more than 30 or more damage in a single turn, though, that's how you'd lop off one of the heads. So, which always feels funny to me because if you shoot it with an arrow and do 32 damage, a head falls off. It feels a little funky, but that's up to the DM to work through. The other fun thing about it is that they regain 10 hit points for every head that they lose that way. So you really want to be coming at it with radiant damage. And the big problem that I have is I looked up all the radiant damage spells to use, and they're kind of middling. There's not a whole lot of really powerful, really good radiant spells. And even when you like, there's one at 8th level or 7th level or 6th level, but who is taking Sunburst or Sunbeam when they have access to other high level spells, right?
Yeah,
so it's probably not prepped, except for maybe Crown of Stars, which is the one where you create all the little motes of light that circle around your head, and then as a bonus action you could fire them off for a decent amount of damage. So like maybe Crown of Stars is your way to deal with this, but at level 11 this thing is gonna absolutely wreck your shit, especially because with the 5 heads, or rather with multiple heads, it has an opportunity attack for every head. So if it has 8 heads and you run away from it, it's going to hit you 8 times.
Things can quickly go wrong here.
Yeah.
Very quickly. That CR 11 should come little asterisks, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when it sleeps, at least one of the heads is awake and looking around. So it's unlikely that you're going to get past its +9 to perception, right? So under multi-attack, it says the Dracohydra makes as many bite attacks as it has heads. So with 10-foot reach, plus 9 to hit, it only does 1d10 plus 5 damage of a type that you choose. Like, it's up to the Dracolich, depending on which head attacks, right? Acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison. The prismatic breath that it has as well is kind of the same thing here. It recharges on a 4-6, which means you got a pretty good chance of it, you know, coming back, but it's a DC 17 dex save against the 60-foot cone. And on a failed save, you take 6d10 damage of whatever the type was that it shot at you. Again, it's acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison. Or half as much damage on a success. I just want to point out that 6d10 versus when it starts off, 1d10 plus 5 times. So the prismatic breath that can hit multiple people is clearly the correct answer. You start with that. But later in the battle, as this thing has grown more heads, the multi-attack is going to do more damage, assuming that you can land the hits. With the plus 9, chances are good that you will. Also, chances are good you're aiming at the melee creature that you're fighting, and so you're really going to fuck up your barbarian, your fighter, your monk. Those D8 classes that have to get in close, like the rogue for the sneak attack with their whatever rapier, is going to get fucked up fast.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the damage type that it's doing is 1d10, which is bigger than the 1d8 hit die. So if it has 11 heads, it can do more damage in a round than the average rogue or monk or warlock has hit points.
I have a quick question with the rogue, because they can like bonus disengage. Is that only for one head?
No, disengage works for your turn. You yourself are weaving away from all opportunity attacks.
Okay.
So.
That's a good reminder for this instance. There's two things here with this. Initiative is going to be crucial for this. And you better have a good first round. You need to get that sneak attack damage in on that first round to disable that head that's in front of you. So, and you only get one attack because you're rogue, so you got to get that off. The fighter better get his multiple attacks off as well. Otherwise, he's going to be fucked. Because as soon as this Draco Hydra gets a turn, it's going to be devastating with all of the opportunity attacks as well. Plus, it's going to start with at least 5 heads of prismatic breath. You got to have a good first round.
You got to watch out for that shit too, because if you got your Gloomstalker and the assassin and the fighter that blows the action surge all in one go, and you lop off 3 heads, but nobody did radiant damage on the Dracohydra's next turn, it sprouts 6, right? So it's very difficult to actually prepare for what's about to happen. You have to be paying attention on other people's turns to find out, and you've got to be aware of how close you are to it, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. All right. Well, let's roll some dice and ask some questions.
All righty.
2, 4, 8.
Who do we appreciate?
Oh god. It did flash into my mind, and I thought
all right. Role playing. Do we have any role playing inspirations for these? I'm looking at sort of the questions here. I mean, I would go with, like you said, there's their intense hunger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would use that as like rumors of what is around. And I think because these are more rare, I think there would be rumors of gnolls.
Yeah, because what else?
And eating everything.
What else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And so your team's going to be expecting gnolls, and then this flies down.
I was going to say the other flip side of that is anybody that catches a glimpse of this huge creature flying in the sky with the multiple heads is going to immediately think Tiamat's here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you, like, against the backdrop of the clouds, you don't have a sense of scale at that point. You just know it's fucking huge.
Yeah, right? That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
There's a lot of really good plot hooks that you can use for this. When suddenly entire herds of sheep go missing or are just slaughtered and corpses are left, right? Like, there's going to definitely be the feeling of there is some sort of, because this thing's a hunter, but it's not got particularly high wisdom, right? It doesn't have particularly high intelligence. So while it's effective at hunting, it's almost brute force hunting,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's going to be slaughter and mayhem left behind. It's not going to be sneaky and ambushing. Because it's got dark vision, but it seems to just be out and about and doing its own thing, I feel like it's attacking at night. So there would be a loud crash from the barn and the sound of animals screaming, and a farmer runs out to see what's going on. And there's a massive hole in the side of the barn, and there are three cows missing, and everything else has been slaughtered, right? This is kind of the scene that I would set up to get that plot hook, that quest, the side quest, something. Maybe even just a one shot, like solve the riddle of what is the monster doing this. And then when you get to drop the Dracohydra on the table, your players are going to be all shocked and be like, what the shit is this? Are we fighting Tiamat?
Yeah, exactly. I think role-playing this, I think, okay, so very food-driven. So always feeling intense hunger. And I think the way you would challenge your players with that is that this creature is going to be, they have intense hunger. They will be impatient. They will be impulsive all the time. They will be, they're intelligent, but their priority is their hunger. And they'll do almost anything to satiate that. And the party is part of that. So while it might not be a good idea at any particular time, maybe they won't take that opportunity to try and kill one of them. As soon as it's a good opportunity, they will. As soon as one of them breaks off, or they split the party, they will try and get the weakest person. So I would always have that tension when this creature's around, especially if the party's trying not to fight it.
Yeah, okay. What about like exploration clues that it's around, layer details, any of that stuff? I was thinking about what their layers might look like. Is their hunger their treasure driven as a dragon? Would it just be filled with bones and like DoorDash boxes?
I can safely say it has skipped the dishes.
Yeah, it's just got DoorDash boxes and delivery guy bones. But yeah, do we think they have any other treasure in there? I would think about that. What if you just happen upon one of their layers? I think it'd be a lot of bones. Maybe that just is their treasure, is bones.
I think the treasure's the meat, right? Like the only thing about it is that it's hungry, mm-hmm. hungry, hungry all of the time, yeah. Right?
So, well, but it'll eat that immediately. So what's left? Just
the bones. I think there will be remains. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Dracohydra would look at it as treasure. It's just the remains of whatever the adventurer was carrying when they were unfortunately killed by this thing. So down there's likely going to be weapons, right? And armor, there's going to be spell books, components. There'll be everything that adventurers would have, but I don't think the Dracohydra thinks about it at all. It just happens to be there. And it would probably be, they have a swim speed, so I imagine there would be a large area of water, but I noticed that they're not amphibious unless I misread.
No, I didn't see that. Yeah.
So they wouldn't be coming up from beneath the water.
Mm-hmm.
But no, but it just means that they're swim, so that they're just suited to most environments, right?
Yeah. So I would have an area of water for sure. But just in fairness, you got to remember they're not amphibious.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, okay, so for my environmental, my exploration, you're going to realize really quickly that there are no sounds in the forest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the animals, all the birds, all the everything down to squirrels are going to be dead, right? So when you do come across what I would consider a lair, yeah, it's going to be bones, but I wonder if like the bones make up this giant nest area around, and you might be able to, like, if it picks up 7 or 8 people, it's not like a knoll that's never satiated. Like, they will all feast. Every head needs to feast. But they might take multiple prisoners all at once to feast on later as well, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Have a crippled captor that it can kill the next time it is hungry, right? And it is smart enough to do that. Like I say, it's like an ape or a dolphin, right? So that level of intelligence to... I mean, dolphins are actually legit scary. With the way that they hunt and the tactics they use and whatnot. So they will straight up fuck with people when they want to. And apes have been known to pull practical jokes on people. Like, this thing has a personality. Don't be fooled by the fact that it doesn't speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. I think the real big thing with this one is combat and all the different ways you can use all those different heads. I mean, that's got to be the top tactic that you use is just adding in the heads one at a time. And what is, did you say it's 30? If it goes down 30 hit points, it loses a head and 2 grow back.
Yeah.
At CR 11, every character's doing at least 30 damage.
Oh yeah, sneak attack is your worst enemy, right?
Yeah, like, so you go in there and your players pop off all their big shit, like proud of themselves, and then it comes back and grows all these heads. Like,
and remember, it's not when it takes 30 or more damage per an attack, it's per a single turn.
Mm.
Right. So like, if the fighter pops off action surge, that's going to rack up to 30, right?
Yeah, at least. Yeah. And what if they do like a high level, I don't know, fireball or some shit that I've seen do like 90, like in that one, do they go 3 heads back or 6 heads back from that one attack?
No, it says if it takes 30 or more damage in a single mm-hmm. turn. So on like Terry's turn, he does 30 damage, we lose a head. You know, Dan's turn does 30 damage, we lose a head. Dave's turn does 30 damage, do a head. And then it's a Dracula's turn, bang, 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 6 heads erupt, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do each heads get a chance to recharge the breath weapon?
No, the breath weapon is just one for the entire creature.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of like, with all the heads, you got to think real technically on like what, because that would be, if you had 11 heads all popping off a breath weapon,
that'd be like a Pink Floyd laser show.
Yeah.
Going off,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm looking at the prismatic breath and I hate the fact that it doesn't do, you know, 1d10 of poison and 1d10 of acid and 1d10 of fire. Right. It does 6d10 of one type at a time.
Right.
But I think the reason for that is only one of the heads are going to pop off that breath weapon. Right. Yeah. But we should be seeing it regularly. So when I'm looking at the fact that it's got this crazy multi-attack and yet the prismatic breath recharges more often than a regular dragon breath, which does, you know, recharge 5 to 6. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is 4 to 6. You're recharging, what's the math on that, like 16.6% more often. They want you to be using, like the design of this is to be using the breath weapon, which means probably hit and run tactics from a distance. Also, you get a 60-foot cone. That's big. You're hitting maybe the whole party, right? And mm-hmm. repeatedly through a combat. So my big tactic here is retreat. Even though it's growing more heads, you do 30 damage to it, but when it regains 10 hit points for each head regrown this way, that's like, so you knock it down 30 and it regains 20. And you knock it down 30, it regains 20. At some point, you're going to be able to kill this multi-headed creature, right? You will eventually whittle it down, but that's going to take 22 turns,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it's going to be absolutely fucking wild to fight this thing. And it knows that, generally speaking, it's going to lose eventually, so it will retreat and use the breath weapon. I legitimately don't know how you kill this thing without the fucking sun sword, without the guiding bolt or the like the regular radiant spells we're looking for. And there's nothing in the lore or the description that says shadow creature, undead, you need radiant, right? It's almost counterintuitive to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I, for when I see this many speeds, I try and think of an environment where I'm going to have the advantage in all of the places. If I can swim, I can fly, and I have a walking speed, where can I do that? And I think that makes me think this Dracohydra is probably going to be hunting outside near a water source, maybe. You know, this would be a great encounter if you've got a party that's on a river and they're moving down a river, especially because that 60-foot, is it 60-foot cone? That 60-foot cone, it's always challenging, right, trying to get the party to fit in it, but it's real easy if you're coming from above and coming down, because how wide that cone is at 60 feet, if you can get them while they're on the river or close to the water, you're going to get all of them. Mm-hmm. Getting nice and close, because it doesn't matter, you've caused a huge amount of damage at the start. Their first turn is not going to go as well as they want it to, because it never does. So you're probably going to have a couple more heads. You're going to get your prismatic breath off. But yeah, I would come in from above.
The other really interesting thing that you could do with this, just as I'm looking at it, is you could have, say, for example, a green head pop up right out of the water.
Yeah.
And they hit it and lop it off and it goes down. And then on the next round, 2 green heads pop up. They go, oh, this is a Hydra. And then one of them hits them with a breath weapon.
Right.
Which they will not be fucking expecting.
And that reminds you that even though they're not amphibious, they can still hold their breath.
Yeah.
And they still have a good constitution modifier. So they can stay underwater for a while, for an into whole combat if they want to, really.
Would you give them a swallow mechanic? They're all about eating and whatnot, and they're huge size. Would you have that?
I always struggle with the swallow mechanic. Like, when can you do it? Like, if a huge creature bites a medium creature, should that not automatically be a swallow? Should not automatically be grappled? Like, it's always tough. I don't know how to put this rule across on my table.
I like to do it for But I like to do it, but I like to do it infrequently.
Yeah.
But this creature absolutely eats and eats and eats. It actually says the word, these gluttonous creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they're not necessarily taking the time to chew real thoroughly. So potentially could just pick up and swallow you whole.
Yeah. I would assume that its stomach is only going to be able to hold like 4 party members. Or like a paladin and his mount. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would absolutely let this thing swallow one person. I also think it's cool because if you do 30 damage from inside, can you picture like one of the heads just exploding and from the stump, a character wriggles out and falls to the ground?
Oh, maybe, I think I would allow that. If I would certainly say, I know this, it's probably one stomach, but I would say if it's the head that swallowed them, I would say you see how where you need to crawl out. I would give them a check to do it.
Yeah, because their necks are very long. So like they would have a round to be in the neck before they go to the stomach.
Right.
I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
In the artwork, we have 5 tails and it mentions it in the lore, but we don't get a tail attack. I would add a tail attack to this and make it a CR 12, right? The 5 tail attacks that do, you know, 1d8 plus 3 damage. Like I'm going to drop it a damage die off of the bite and have it just do bludgeoning damage, but have it be able to do, you know, a multi-attack with tails instead of heads if it wants, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why it would, but maybe if there's a lot of radiant damage going off, right? There's the artwork.
Not a blackhead in the artwork.
I was about to say that there's no blackhead in the artwork. There are 2 whites and 2 greens and a blue and a red, but no black. There absolutely is a black head on this creature, and not a black head like a pimple. There's a black dragon head on this creature. I don't know why. Maybe do dragons get pimples, Peps? Oh
God, we don't.
Only young.
No, but I would
only
say
young dragons.
The only reason I bring it up is because I think acid is going to be the best one of the damage types to use.
Yeah.
Because you're going to find resistance to the other ones in some of the subclasses, but acid is the most rare.
Right. Nice to have acid coming at you in a cone as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for the Dracohydra.
All right. Terry, you have the second?
Yeah, I'm going to take us through the Eye Drake. So when a beholder contends with a dragon for power or has some kind of dragon enemy, its thoughts of the dragon can rival, can start to become deeply obsessive. We know that beholders will typically be obsessive over other beholders, but if for whatever reason it has a dragon as a significant enemy, it may obsess over this dragon instead. Because beholders will dream about the creatures that they obsess over, the dragon's image will start to enter the dreams, and the dreams will become more and more chaotic and exaggerated until ultimately a new creature is created, and that creature is the Eye Drake. The Eye Drake is a creature that has resembles a beholder in that it has multiple beholder eyes coming off from stalks, and it does have a single larger eye, but these beholder features are blended in with draconic features. So it may have a dragon-like body, a dragon-like mouth. No limbs, though. We'll still have a tail, and the beholder eye stalks will be coming off of the various parts of the wings. So eye drakes are large creatures. They're typically lawful evil. They have a decent amount of hit points. It's 14d10 plus 42, so that averages 119. They have no walking speed because they have no limbs. So they fly for 30 feet and they hover as well. Hover ability is always good to note. It means that they won't fall to the ground no matter what. They have strength and charisma, their 2 highest stats. That'll be followed by constitution, wisdom, and intelligence. And then they have just a regular amount of dexterity, no modifier to it though. Saving throws, constitution, and wisdom. Immunities or condition immunities is prone because they have no limbs and they hover. But they do have dark vision to 120 feet, passive perception 18. Their languages are deep speech. This will be from the beholder side of them. And then draconic, of course, from the dragon side of them. And that they have unusual nature, which means that they do not require food or drink. For actions, then, they have a bite attack that is, you know, most creatures do. It'll do an average of 13 damage. It'll be piercing as well. But their main weapon is their anti-magic breath. Recharges on the 6. But it's a magic wave. It comes out in a 30-foot cone. Each creature in the area does its DC 14 for constitution save. The damage is going to average out at 39. It will be force damage, of course, half as much on a failed save. They have their eye rays as well from the multiple eyes. They have multiple different rays, 6 different rays. So they have freezing ray. They have a debilitating ray, repulsion ray, Fire Ray, Paralyzing Ray. They also have the Death Ray. This is the big one, DC 14. It's a dex save, or you're going to take an average of 28 necrotic damage on a failed save. And if you're taken to 0 hit points with that one, you will also die. So that's Idrake.
Sorry, that's really fucking wild. The fact that the anti-magic breath also does damage.
Yeah.
Because the anti-magic cone for the beholder doesn't.
Yeah, that's right. So it does. Oh, yeah, that's right. So it does damage, and then also every spell third level lower ends.
But it is a breath weapon, so that gives the damage.
That's pretty cool. I like it as a breath weapon.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I like that it doesn't require food or drink because it has an eyeball in its mouth.
I also like the fact that it can somehow speak deep speech and draconic around this eyeball.
The eyeball that's in its mouth.
But I also like the fact that even if the beholder doesn't know draconic, it can just determine that this creature that I've dreamt up does. It just happens. We manifested it knows this language.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't know all of the beholder eye rays. Are any of these different?
One second. I can tell you.
Debilitating ray? Is there a repulsion ray? I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Like, I know they have a death ray.
Paralyzing ray they have.
Yeah.
But all right. Sure about, hold on. Like... Let me read out the beholder ones and you tell me if they show up or don't.
Okay.
Charm ray?
No.
Paralyzing ray?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fear ray?
No.
Slowing ray?
No.
Enervation? That one does necrotic damage. It's called something else there?
No, they have it. Well, the death ray does necrotic damage.
Yeah, well, there's death ray on the beholder as well. Telekinetic and sleep?
No, for both.
Petrification and disintegration?
No, for both.
No.
So there's only two overlap then, right?
Well, that's pretty cool.
Paralyzing and death. So what was it? Fire, repulsion, that one pushes, debilitating does thunder, and freezing does cold. So that's neat. So
cool. Well, that's good because they went, well, let's not just make another beholder.
Yeah.
Let's give it its own race.
Give it a little flavor. Speaking of flavor, let's roll to see who wants to talk about role playing.
Excellent segue there, Kafarina. Yeah. You can tell you've been
I'm working on it.
You're multiple production teams. 20.
I got a 1.
I got an 18. I'm going second with an 18.
Second with an 18. Mm-hmm. Hit me, Pepperina.
All right, we're talking about role playing first. What do you got?
We're an eye drake? Okay, yeah. Well. Here's the thing. They're still relatively intelligent, eh? But what's weird is they're lawful evil, but they strike me as they would be chaotic because they're what do we do first role playing? Because they come from obsessive, crazy dreams. So if they're lawful, I don't understand what the code is necessarily that they're following other rules.
I think it's based on the paranoia of the beholder, and that's why beholders are lawful evil. I always think they should be chaotic because of the eye stalks.
Yeah.
And they're randomized, but they're actually, like, behaviorally lawful because they've got their own paranoia, their own rules. This is my lair. You stay out. You follow my rules. If you're my minion, otherwise I kill you on sight, right? And if anybody steps out of line, I'm watching everybody very, very specifically and to see if there's any deviation in behavior or patterns, or like it's this weird obsessive, almost like hyper paranoia to them. And I guess that gets passed down to the eye drake as well.
It's the laws of a very anxious person. I like.
Right. But because they're relatively intelligent, you wouldn't make them, you know, they're not, this is not, their paranoia is not real rage. They're trying to get you out of their area. It's not like they're just snapping at you like a dog. Like, they'll be aware of what they're doing. So I think, I would need to mirror the paranoia of the beholder.
Especially because it's trying to establish a lair and a horde, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, that's right. It's like, how do you pair that with the dragon side of it?
Right. So I think it feels like
a chronic creature that's going to bring the fight to you because of the paranoia for you to get out away from the horde. Where it always feels like you have to get all the way to the dragon, right? You got to get into the deepest part of that. I feel like this thing is coming for you immediately to get you out of there. And probably the challenge is going to be trying to get in.
Yeah, I love that it talks about how it is just obsessed with defending its horde.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I guess my role playing here is that it is going to come out like swinging. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be the opportunity really to negotiate with this. And it's going to be screaming and babbling the whole time.
Right.
Trying to just be the biggest presence it can. to intimidate people to get them the fuck out. Get out of my lair. These are my things. Leave me alone. Right. And just that level of territorialism is going to be ramped up to 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But also it doesn't speak common. So,
which is hilarious.
I've not seen many players that speak deep speech. I mean, there's always one that does Draconic.
I always have half of my party speaks Draconic for some stupid reason.
Yeah, me too. My entire party speaks Draconic.
Oh, yeah. I would have this coming out speaking deep speech, just yelling.
Yeah. Make it and weird at first.
Yeah, like nobody knows. Or a weird combination of the two. Like it's just, you can pick, whoever speaks Draconic can pick out a couple of words here and
like
there.
How I used to get yelled at by like my Italian coworker, who just like would lapse into Italian every third or fourth word when he was worked up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. It's that like angry bilingual where you don't know what language to yell at somebody in.
anger and passion. Anger and passion. Two times you refer to your own language.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that this thing has wings and doesn't use them as wings. Because if you look at the art, all of like the eye stalks are where the bones would be in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like fluid and floppy. Like, that's got to be really weird and off-putting.
Right, and because it has hover, that suggests that its flying ability comes from the beholder side of it, not the dragon side of it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it's just like a weird flying slug with horns.
Yeah, it's awful.
And eyeball wings.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay, what about... What about exploration or clues? Are these things, do we think they'll leave their lairs at all? I mean, I guess to find treasure, but are we going to find them out and about?
Or are they just going to send minions?
Yeah.
Yeah, minions. I think this thing's going to be locked down like Alcatraz, this lair. I think it's going to be doors and locks and traps. But the exploration side for me is going to be how many different fucked up different types of puzzles or traps can I come up with? With beholder inspiration melded with draconic inspiration. We mix in different elements and breath weapons, but also like otherworldly shit into it. That's how I'm going to up the exploration.
I want this lair to be indicative of the first four eye rays. You are going to feel it shaking as you're walking because of the force damage ray. Because I think this thing is just blasting rays all of the time when it's angry, and it's always angry.
Well, right? You would if you could, I think.
Yeah, and so the debilitating ray, the freezing ray, the fire ray, so you're doing, there's loud booms from thunder, the entire thing is shaking. You can smell sulfur and it's weirdly warm or it's very, very cold in some places. So this layer that it's going to have is going to be, and there's the necrotic damage too. So like plants, there will be dead plants in some areas, right? Or desiccated corpses of minions or animals that came in here and looked at it. CR8 for this feels about right based on the hit points and AC. But honestly, it wouldn't take much to boost those up. Add a couple more rays or boost the numbers and make this a CR like 16, because this thing could be malevolent enough if you wanted to do like a ancient eye drake kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But which brings me to my point with the lair and the horde. They're so protective of the horde. Do they get the same benefits that a dragon does? The bigger the horde, the more shit they can do, the more magical they are, the bigger and better they get.
Yeah,
I guess that would depend on how much the beholder that created it knew about dragons, because its abilities it's getting are based on what that thing jumped up.
That's fair. A beholder's intelligence is 17.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely get minions. They enslave people like crazy. That's one of their big things, right? And they're all about their own layers, so, and their own home bases, and they've got regional effects as well, even though they're only a CR 13. They're one of the lowest CRs that have layers, so mm-hmm. I bet that they're sending out spies to look into the dragon's layers. And well why do they have multiple hordes in different places, right? Mm-hmm. Like that would freak out a beholder, so it might think about that and obsess about it for an eye drake as well, right? So you might have an eye drake with multiple layers and hordes, but it's so paranoid about the horde, it's like it takes the horde with it. Mm-hmm. Layer to layer, like there's got to be some sort of weird dichotomy that this thing, I feel like it wouldn't live very long. Or it would just burrow into a mountainside, make some catacombs, and live for fucking ever, right?
Yeah, now I'm just picturing all of its minions carrying its treasure on their back, like, traipsing through the woods to go to a new lair.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the kind of weird, fucked up kobolds? You would run into a bunch of kobolds that have stones with eyes painted on them that they hold in their mouths, and they try to talk to you. And that's how you know that it's...
When you always talk to your kobolds. I think its paranoia could even extend, like we talked about traps and things. If it has a specific town nearby that it collects its treasure from, I think it would trap around that town so that other people can't come in and steal from it, because that's my treasure. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, I like that.
So I think you would come across those types of traps and things coming even close to this thing's town, because it would see that as its town.
Right. It's on the list.
So yeah. So you can't touch it. That's mine. I just haven't gotten all my treasure out of it yet. So that's how I would.
I like that it's large size. But it looks like you said, like a big ass slug, and the wings even look wobbly on it.
Mm-hmm.
I could imagine this thing moving into a sewer system and popping up to attack people to take their shit in the middle of the night, and just be like, you show up and like, oh, no one's hurt from the blacksmith in the last couple of days. You go there and he's been burned to a crisp or withered to a desiccated corpse, or someone heard a loud boom and suddenly like everyone in that house was dead. Like, you could actually build a little mystery around this eye drake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just eyes popping out of the sewers.
What are we on? Role playing for me?
We're on combat now.
Combat. My turn, combat.
Yeah, okay. I have the 20.
Okay. Well, I have a question for you guys, because I like to just try and fuck with people as much as I can. Okay. I'm looking at this repulsion ray. I'm thinking hordes. I'm thinking coins. I'm thinking blasting. What happens? You guys are both DMs. If I blast a repulsion ray when I'm buried inside of my hoard, and I've blast those coins and all those jewels at those party members, because I'm thinking, would it be the same effect as if you use coins for the animate object spell, where it's, I think it's 1d4 plus 4 damage per coin, which hits with bludgeoning damage. And this repulsion ray will blast 4d6 force damage and then blasts for 60 feet.
Yeah, I would absolutely have it do the regular 4d6 force damage and 4d6 bludgeoning if I'm going to hit them with something.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to use a lot of things like coins, I don't know, you'd have to roll like a d100 or something. Like, you'd have to roll something to see how many hit them.
Maybe
I
might try and do it with the rules that you might do with a breath weapon. I'd say, look, here's the situation, dex save it. Mm-hmm. Let's look at a total amount of bludgeoning damage.
Yeah, they would have to do a dex save. Whoever failed it, I think, would get hit, but like, I would roll to see how many they got hit by.
Right.
I don't think I'd add the +4, but maybe a d4.
If I can't use it in combat here, I would move that over to the, I know we just had the exploration conversation where I might use that same repulsion ray as inspiration for a trap and essentially create like a landmine inside the hoard or something. Like, if inside whatever the treasure is they're trying to get, I might use it that way.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here looking at the rays themselves, and the freeze ray does the half movement thing that, you know, we've seen in other cold attacks. Debilitating ray does incapacitated, repulsion pushes. And the other side effect, fire is pretty straightforward. Paralyzing is pretty straightforward. But the death ray, of course, when you drop to 0 hit points, you're dead, right? So I'm sitting here looking at this, and I'm trying to picture their lair. And I don't think, as much as they're underground and whatnot, because Beholder and most dragons, but I don't think it's tunnels. I think it's bridges over caverns, because they're going to freeze you where you are. They're going to hover and attack you from above and below. And they're going to hit you with that repulsion ray that does force damage and pushes you up to 60 feet away, which is going to blast you directly off of whatever little bridge into the cavern below, right? And at CR8, most of your players are going to be able to drop 40 or 50 feet and take 5d6 fall damage and be really fucking wounded, half removed from the fight. You know, it's gonna take them around to get back into it, and but they're still in it, right? Like, I don't think that's, well, I mean, yeah, the 4d6 on top of that, like, this thing could be a player killer relatively easily.
I think, though, it's hard to strategize your eye rays because they're random.
Yes, absolutely. But I also think that you would hedge your bets to do it, like,
yeah,
if you have a long narrow bridge, you've got a mm-hmm. really good chance that you are going to hit them with the paralyzing, the slowing, the incapacitated enough to stop them, slow them on the bridge for long enough to get that repulsor ray off at least once.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Because it is what it's, they can do it three times and it can't be a duplicate. So that's a 50% of them are going off every round.
Yeah. Yeah. You always have a 50% chance of hitting with the repulsor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any insights, Peps, on combat with these guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, their eye rays are a lot of fun. I do enjoy that they're different. I'm glad we looked into that. I think that's what it's going to rely on. Its bite is whatever. Its breath weapon is cool, but it recharges on a 6. Like the last one got a 4 to 6.
Yeah.
This one is rarely going to have its breath weapon.
It's really a beholder in the shape of a dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
More than truly a half dragon.
A very rough shape of a dragon.
Yeah.
It's a beholder in the shape of a slug with wings. So yeah, I definitely, your eye rays are going to be what you're going to use. I mean, just like a beholder.
Although I got to say that 30-foot cone of force damage mm-hmm. to start the combat, even your bear totem barbarian is going to get fucked up by the force damage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has...
That one of its rays breath, I think we've overlooked. I think it's mm-hmm. going to make it very difficult to sneak up on this thing. If, you know, Sir Pots and Pans, the Paladin Knight, if he makes any noise, that anti-magic breath's going off. Everything that's invisible is now revealed. It'll be going at the entrance, right? Everything that's invisible is revealed. All of your buffs are canceled.
Your mage armor's gone.
Your mage armor's gone. Yeah.
But I think it's only going to get to shoot that off once, maybe twice. Like, you're not going to get a lot.
But again, you got to do it early.
Yeah.
But
again, so you got to be cowardly? Very
strategic of when you do it. But like, you can't hold on to it.
I do it right away, round one.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. First round, anti-magic. I love that it has a bite for some reason. Like, we're ever going to fucking use that.
Right.
Yeah. But with the anti-magic breath, I'm going to hit with that. Debilitate everybody there, hit with a couple of eye rays, and then fuck off.
Yeah.
Because
cowardly,
I'm going to retreat back towards my horde to protect it. But because this thing is going to act like a freaking guard dog at the like entrance of its lair, it's probably going to be able to hit and drop back over and over and over. But with a fly speed of only 30 feet, the party will be able to keep up with it unless it does weird things like go vertical, up and down shafts and whatnot.
And I feel like it should, and it would. It's absolutely. I would make it, it's going to start hitting you early because it's obsessing over its horde. And but you got a lot of vertical tunnels to go. It's going to be like Super Mario Brothers trying to get to this motherfucker with, and just hitting you with the anti-magic ray and then just coming back rays and then he's gone again. You might have a couple of flyers in the group maybe, but everyone else is on ropes.
Yep. And let's split the party because that's always fun.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea.
It will fight to the death. So I would have it like its minions are going to block any exits. You mm-hmm. are not getting out of here. Like, even if you're like, we need to get out, you're not going to be able to. Its minions will close the doors. They will bar them off from the outside. You're not leaving here.
Get you stuck in those tunnels, those vertical tunnels as well. And then you get that repulsion around them from underneath. There you go. There's an extra 60 feet of damage when they go up and they come back down. I love it.
You could just imagine this thing waiting at the top of one of these shafts. To the first player that sticks his head up is going to get hit by the anti-magic breath for all that force damage, and then, you know, by the time they get up, how many players can get to the top, up to the top ledge as it's shooting and maybe knocking one of them down again? Yeah. And then it retreats, and the next time you see a bridge, you know more kerfuckery is happening. Like, this could be like a really fun like chase through the right. layer here.
Yeah that's it, exactly. I love this thing.
All right,
I know it doesn't have a swim speed, but I would definitely have it dive into like low pools of water to get into the next chamber.
Yeah.
Right. That just holds its breath because it's got a decent con and it swims slowly. But if it can get a lead on the players from one of its up and downs, then it can would absolutely do this. And again, hit with the freezing rays are coming out of water. I would make it so that you have to do a strength check to get through the water on the other side, right? Like, there would be some kerfuckery here that I would be playing with.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. That brings us to our last creature, the Elder Brain Dragon, which I have been excited for since I got Fizbin's. Is like the first thing that I read.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. This was the big feature for me.
Yeah. I have been patiently waiting to cover this dragon. So the Elder Brain Dragon is something something. I hope I never come across as a player, but as a DM, I freaking love them.
Do you have the mini?
I do not have that mini.
Oof.
It was like right when WizKids like upped their prices, and it's like ridiculous for that one, especially for the size. But I would love it. So you know, wink wink out there, internet. If anyone wants to send me a 3D printed model. But they are the kind of horrible that gives you shivers down your spine. So basically, this is what happens when the Mind Flayers get their hands on a dragon, which in itself sounds like a bad idea, but it gets worse. They bind the dragon, and the Elder Brain attaches itself to it by digging its tentacles into its back and brain, transforming the dragon completely into a nightmarish new entity. The Elder Brain uses the dragon to be able to escape the brine pool, so it has the ability to lead powerful illithid armies. Did I say illithid right? Is that how you... That's how we say it.
yeah, it's illithid.
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 I say
illithid. I say mind flayer.
Illithid. The dragon mutates all of its abilities into serving the Elder Brain. Its powers are now psychic, and its breath weapon changes completely. It now spews out a stream of brine filled with tadpoles, allowing the Elder Brain to reach even more creatures and grow its army bigger and faster. These dragons aren't technically dragons like the rest that we have covered today. Based on their stat blocks, they are gargantuan aberrations that are lawful evil. They get a natural AC of 17, an average HP of 350, a speed of 40 feet, and a flying or hovering speed of 80 feet. They are a CR of 22. All of their stats are above average, with strength being the highest with a +8, followed by constitution and charisma with a +7. Intelligence gets a +5 and wisdom a +4. Dexterity is their lowest with a +1, which is slightly lower than most dragons get a +2 to their dex. Their saving throws and constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma, all getting between +11 and +14. Arcana has a +12, and Insight and Perception have a +18. They are immune to psychic damage and to being charmed or frightened. They have blindsight of 120 feet. They speak deep speech and draconic, just like the Eidrake, and have telepathy for 5 miles.
Jesus, that's the Elder Brain shit right there. Like, that's wild.
5 miles, they can talk to anything. They have 4 legendary resistances a day. They are siege monsters, meaning they deal double damage to structures and objects, and they don't need air or sleep. They get a multi-attack and can do 1 bite, 2 claws, and 1 tentacle attack. The bite and claws are pretty basic. The bite has a +15 to hit and does 2d10 +8 piercing damage and 2d10 psychic. The claw has a +15 to hit and only does 1d6 +8 slashing. The tentacle does 1d8 +8 psychic damage, and if the target is huge or smaller, it is grappled by the dragon. The dragon can have up to 4 creatures grappled at a time. So it can do that every round, just grapple somebody.
I just want to pause for a second here and point out the bite and the tentacles have psychic damage, which is wild when you think something sinks its teeth into you and you take psychic damage. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because it would be almost like an interference in your own brain, like a sudden spike of a migraine for, 4 to 6 seconds, and then it's gone again. That's how I would run that flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So now for their super gross breath weapon. I think this is probably my favorite breath weapon that I've read about so far.
You don't like the spores from the deep dragon?
I do like the spores. That one is up there too. I do. I actually have a paladin that follows a deep dragon. But that's a story for another time. We came up with it on the show. So the dragon exhales brine in a 120-foot line that is 15 feet wide. Each creature in that area must make a constitution save, taking 10d10 psychic damage on a failed save or half as much damage on a successful one. On a success or a failure, if the creature isn't a construct or an undead, it becomes infested with Illithid tadpoles. So it doesn't matter if you succeed, you're still getting infected.
So that's everyone.
Everyone.
Round one.
Yeah. Everyone's infected because it was what 120 foot long.
Oh, it's a line, 15, I guess, actually.
15 foot so wide. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hallways then are going to be its best friend.
Yeah.
While infested, the creature takes 3d10 psychic damage at the start of each of its turns. The creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself after it succeeds on three of these saves. So it takes at least three turns of getting 3d10 psychic damage to save out of this. If the creature is targeted by magic that ends a curse or restores 40 hit points or more, the tadpoles infesting the creature are killed instantly, ending the effect on the creature. If a humanoid is reduced to zero hit points while infested, the creature is stable but remains unconscious for 6d12 hours.
That's crippling. That's up to 3 days.
Yeah. When the period of unconsciousness ends, the creature transforms into a mind flayer.
Fuck.
With all of its hit points. And it says to see the monster manual for your new stat block, I guess, as a player. Casting a wish spell on the unconscious creature rids it of the infestation and prevents it from turning into a mind flayer. We also get legendary actions.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah. So, it can do one. I know, we're not done yet. it can do one tentacle attack. So that basically replaces your tail attack of your average dragon. Or it can use two actions and can shatter concentration. The dragon targets a creature it is grappling. The target's concentration on a spell it has cast or ability it is maintaining ends, and the target takes 3d12 psychic damage. Now we're done.
I mean, it's up there already for a candidate for one of the favorites for me. Yeah. I love black dragons, love deep dragons we talked about a minute ago, but this is pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to go with this fucking thing. Like, it's such a player killer.
I mean, so if I'm understanding this right, if we're lucky it's a line, because if it was a cone, everyone's dead immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whoever gets hit, so probably two or three of your players are going to get hit with this this tadpole brine breath, which they're infected automatically, right? Mm-hmm. And then if they go to zero hit points at any point while they're infected, they will turn into a mind flayer. There's no save. They're unconscious for 6d12. And if you don't get a wish spell, and good luck with that in a day and a half or whatever you get, like 2 days, you're going to turn into a mind flayer no matter what. And that might be three people in the body.
Yeah.
Well, if you get targeted by magic that ends a curse or restores 40 hit points or more in one go, then that ends the infestation.
Okay.
While you're up. But if you go down,
you go to zero.
If you go to zero, that's
someone
it.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, like I said, you have to make three successful saves to get out of this.
Yeah.
And each round you're taking 3d10 damage.
Right.
Until you get those three saves just automatically.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah.
This thing, I just compared it against, I wanted to see how well it's hit points stacked up against other CR22 dragons, just mm-hmm. really quickly. And it actually has a little bit lower AC and fewer hit points by about one attack's worth than an ancient green dragon. So that's kind of the realm that we're talking about here, right? Like, this thing is beefy. You are going to fucking fight this thing for rounds.
Yeah.
Wild. Love it.
All right. So let's roll some dice and talk a little more.
8.
16.
3.
So that's me. Let me get back to the right screen. So role playing. I mean, there's so much you can do with this. With the 5 miles of telepathy, like, it knows when you're in its area.
It's talking to you the whole way there.
It can, yeah. Like, if it can sense you within 5 miles, I would say. It's the elder brain. Like, it's the elder brain on a dragon.
Yeah.
So it is. And I mean, it like
makes sense in you, because I imagine there may be one or two mind flayers that also accompany the elder brain. You know, like there's something's gonna sense you.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and like with the last one, it only speaks deep speech and Draconic. So it's in your ear and you can't understand what it's saying. Like you just have this like weird language.
Telepathy. If it's language, it's telepathy. No, if as long as you understand a language, I think you understand what it's saying. If it's telepathy.
See, yeah.
I would have it not understand. You don't understand it. At least at first. Maybe the closer you get. But if you're on the edge of that 5 miles.
I always think that telepathy is just the way that it makes itself known, right? So if I have intentions, or if I'm communicating, or whatever, if I'm trying to threaten you, you feel the threat and it's translated into common however you want. But I can choose to do it in deep speech, right? And then just be weird, whispering, babbling nonsense in people's minds. Like you could go either way with it.
Yeah. I mean, it would act very similar to mind flayers being around, but I think it would be even more intimidating as it's speaking. Yeah, just having that like dragon, you know, fear sense of presence, and I mean, mind flayers are scary enough, but like a dragon mind flayer.
This is so wild. It's like, I'm a little baffled. Terry, did you have something for role playing?
For role playing, I feel like because it now has, so the elder brain used to be vulnerable in some sense, right? No mobility, kind of stuck in one place, in that brain pool. Now that you have all of that intelligence and all of the ability, but it's now mobile on a dragon, I feel like when role playing, the elder brain is going to be a lot more confident, a lot more sure of itself. Especially that it knows that it has tentacle attacks and it knows that it has shatter concentration, won't be afraid to be right by your casters. And I think I would put this thing just right up in front of the party immediately, a show of force. And I would role play with that confidence as well.
Yeah. I mean, even the tentacle has like 15-foot reach too. Yeah. So like you might think that you're kind of safe a few steps back, but you're not. Like, you're not at all. And even what its speed is,
yeah,
and this 80 flying, you know, it could fly, swoop over a top of you and grab you with its tentacle.
This elder brain has got all the reason to be confident, right? That tentacle attack on your casters as a flying speed, it goes straight up, shatter concentration. You're going to lose, you can lose a major person immediately.
For role playing, for me, for these guys, I figure the ego is going to be completely out of control.
Yeah
You have all of the ego of a dragon, of an ancient dragon, plus all the ego of a elder brain that has solved its biggest limitation, and that is immobility. Now it can move, now it can go to the civilization. It says in the text it can lead armies. It absolutely fucking would walk down Main Street. The army would be marching in the streets, the mind flayers going, because they're not limited anymore, and the elder brain would follow. Because remember, we talked about illithids in episode 133 and 140, and elder brains specifically in 133, and how their radius that they have, if the mind flayers go beyond that, the elder brain loses control of them, right? And they can become more individualistic. That's not the case anymore. The elder brain just gets more and more and more till it fills up 5 miles in one direction. Like, that's a radius. That's 100 square miles.
Yeah.
Right. That's nuts that it could control an army that big. And it absolutely fucking would, because it's making more mind flayers. So my big thing here is the ego. Did you guys see Avengers Endgame?
Yeah.
No, maybe, probably. I don't know. They'll blur together.
There's a character, Thanos' henchman, Ebony Maw, who just babbles the entire time about the blessing that is coming down upon you, for you are privileged enough to die at the hands of Thanos. That is the kind of shit that I think is psychically radiating out for 100 square miles to every creature that can hear it, right? Like this, I know telepathy only targets one person at a time, but I'm treating this like a regional effect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like this ongoing, everyone's having nightmares. Everyone is going to be slightly paranoid and very scared and have a dull headache as this thing gets closer and closer and closer. And that is the dread that I'm going to be able to put there on my players before they even know what they're fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would also be radiating its message through all the army of Mind Flayers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can you imagine?
So even if, yeah, it's a hive mind, so it may only be able to reach one creature, but that one creature is its whole hive.
Can you imagine them all? Okay, so my other fun thing about Mind Flayers, and I like bringing this up and every time we talk about them, is they can't speak normally, right? So they curl one tentacle back into their mouth and loop it back out to act as a tongue so that they can speak. So can you imagine hundreds of Mind Flayers all speaking in the same weird wet accent that they would have, but like all saying the same kind of idea of there is no escape. You will be one of us. Surrender now. But it's a chorus of voices.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Yeah. All right. Exploration, clues, inspirations. I don't know if this falls into this, but or if it would be better in role playing, but it's a thought that I had. And so this is where it's going. I would have the Mind Flayers capture your party and bring them to this dragon and have your party witness this. The Elder Brain crawling onto this dragon that is pinned down. It's an ancient dragon that they've got pinned down.
Oh,
is coming on top of. And you are this new Elder Brain dragon's first sacrifice.
You gotta make it a fucking set piece in tier 4 too. Like, yeah. They've been shut down with anti-magic fields and shit, and they've got to watch a couple of their NPCs, their sidekicks, like we're in the end game now, right? Like, mm-hmm. This is when their sidekicks get turned into Mind Flayers in front of them as the first victims. And like, mm-hmm. What does it take for a level 17, 18 party to retreat, to escape and run?
Yeah. The second it starts shooting tadpole brine out of its mouth, just a huge nope.
And the fact that now it's mobile, we move away from that old Starship Troopers mentality of the Elder Brain. Like, it's afraid, it's stuck in its pool. And now I get more like creepy Doctor Who vibes with this. Yeah. As people start to embrace the telepathy, and maybe even like a weird sort of cult will start to form from that. And you don't really know who's embracing it and who's not embracing it, but they will occasionally speak in chorus. And that, I think that's a good build up to this.
Oh, fuck. This thing is absolutely a great old one warlock patron.
Yeah.
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 That's fun. That's cool. No, my exploration factor here is, I think it smells like pickles.
It's got a brine.
It's got the brine breath, right? Like, I just assume that.
It'll ruin pickles for you forever. Yeah. No more Caesars or Bloody Marys or no more burgers.
Yeah, no, I think that I want to point out, normally whenever I get anything draconic, I give it a lair, right? Mm-hmm. Or a nest or something. I don't do it for this guy. He is like the definitive aspect of him is he is now mobile and doesn't need to be trapped in a lair.
Yeah.
So, and the horde is more Mind Flayers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's all he wants. And he can make so many at a time.
A disturbing amount, upsetting amount.
Yeah, because if the Mind Flayers round up a whole town and stand them in a line, like it's a line, but they could force people to stand in a line. It's 150 feet, just one shot.
This thing is making me think about rethinking my ending to Tyranny of Dragons that I'm running. I have a Githyanki NPC who's a real high-powered mage. He's one of the backstories of a half Githyanki wizard that I have in my party. I'm like, there's all kinds of stuff here with purple comets and things of Mind Flayers showing, and no one knows. And then in the end, you have to summon Tiamat because she's the only thing that can defeat these people. This is where I'm seeing this going now. I'm getting so inspired by this thing.
Yeah.
These people are the enemy.
All right. So combat. What do we have for inspiration for combat? I mean, it's multi-attack is 4 attacks just at once. It has the legendary actions of another tentacle attack or the stopping concentration or ability. It's not just a spell, it's also an ability, which I think is important to note because a lot of like you're not spellcasters have special abilities they can do. So does that have like, would that affect like paladins and their like bullshit where anybody within 5 feet of them can add stuff to saves and like, would you have it affect that kind of stuff?
No, it doesn't have a concentration factor to it.
Well, it just says, or an ability that it's maintaining. So I don't know if that, it's like they're always maintaining that.
Yeah, I don't think that it's like your fighting style. If you've got a defensive fighting style, it's just a thing that you do.
Yeah.
Right? So okay. I'm not sure that I would have, would this affect a magical aura? 100% yes, concentration is on it. But just that bonus from being nearby, probably not. It's like, I wouldn't have this affect a Barbarian's Rage. Like, that is technically an ability that has to be maintained, but that's not something that needs concentration to do it, right? As a matter of fact, if you get hit and take damage, you're fine. Your rage keeps going, right?
Yeah. I don't know, but with the psychic ability of the, like, tentacle attack, it could
be. I don't know. I think it's a DM rage. Call. Yeah. I think that's how much of a dick do you want to be?
DM? Yeah. But with that, with it being able to grapple four players at once, I would save the brine attack for having four players in my tentacles. Line them up and shoot it. You're getting at least four in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we make the joke all the time, and Terry's tired of hearing it, about the pick them up and drop them. But with an 80-foot fly speed and four auto grapple attacks, this is a no fucking brainer.
Mm-hmm. Even they could drop you all in a container that you can't get out of and shoot its breath weapon down on top of you, get all of you at once. It just has to grapple you, drop you into there.
Yep.
Unless you have a monk like, that can run up a wall.
Like it flies up to the top of the water tower, rips off the top of it, and drops you into it. Or a grain silo, and then blasts you with the breath weapon.
Yeah.
And just pickles that grain.
Yeah, I'm sat here trying to think. I always try and use the abilities that it has but nobody expects. So the breath weapons, I know it's kind of the obvious go-to. I love the shatter concentration, especially if you're grappling casters. And then I'm thinking, what's this thing going to do with Siege Monster, though? It deals double damage to objects and structures. So where are you?
Yeah.
Where are you where that can work to its advantage, that it can start to cave things in on you, especially if you've been infected, especially if you're going to change in 6d12 hours? How can it ensure you can't get away with that Siege Monster ability?
I think that the point is it doesn't matter. Like, it's coming for you. You can't getting indoors is not going to save you from this thing.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because it's on the attack. And again, we're talking about the ego, but you look at the strength. It's got a +8 to strength. Like, it's 27. It is going to rip the front of the building off.
Yeah.
And then the tentacles are going to come flying in, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so terrifying. Honestly, when I think of the tactics, the strategy that's going to use, if I zoom out of initiative for a moment and we go back to the idea of them being able to level a whole fucking village at once, here's the math for you, okay? It's a 120-foot line that's 15 feet wide. Assuming that you're not huddling creatures together or making them squeeze together, that is 24 people that all lined up in single file for that 120-foot line. And then it's 15 feet wide, so that's 72.
Mm-hmm.
And it can hit all of them with the tadpole breath. And if these are commoners, they're fucked, right? So that is 72 people. But then remember, that's on a recharge of 5 or 6. You're probably getting this off between 2 or 3 times every single minute, which means that you're probably going to be able to do between 144 and 216 villagers, commoners, nobles, whatever, every minute. The elder brain sitting there taking over a small town or a hamlet, it just does. It just does. The army walks in and wipes them off the face of the planet. And now you've got zombie horde issues, right? Which is just like every one of you that falls makes another one of them. So
I love this idea that you're leading with here, that it will take over and it keeps coming. So now I'm thinking, to zoom out of initiative again, you know, for whatever reason the party has something maybe that it wants from them, but it keeps coming, especially when you have this unusual nature trait that it does not require air or sleep. It knows where you are and it is always coming, and 8 hours a day you need to stop and it does not.
It's the monster from It Follows.
Yeah, great movie. Yeah.
Like meets a zombie apocalypse plus psychic damage plus an army of space Nazis plus a freaking dragon on top of that. Like, it just keeps getting worse. And like, this is a CR22. You put this in the hands of a dungeon master that has the ability to plan for this shit for 7 or 8 sessions leading up to it and really work out the tactics. And this thing is smart enough with a +5 intelligence. It is as smart or smarter than your wizard, than your artificer, than your smartest player in the campaign. I don't know how you fight this thing. This thing is scarier to me than the CR30 Tarrasque.
Yeah, I don't know how you fight this thing.
I would also know if it's just shooting this brine out that's filled with tadpoles. Like, are the mind flayers there not just picking up the tadpoles and infecting other people while it's recharging?
Yeah, like absolutely. Like, hey, you managed to save, but let me ram this thing up your nostril or your eye socket, right? Like, they absolutely would be doing that.
Yeah.
It's freaking amazing. And you got to assume, too, that in this army are all the other weird illithid bits and pieces. Like, you're going to have intellect devourers on a leash, essentially, because these things are pets, right? And so they're going to be out there dropping people to unconsciousness with a couple of failed saves, where we don't even have to worry about hit points. And then a humanoid is unconscious, right? And we've got issues. Anyway, I could wipe the Forgotten Realms with one of these things.
Yeah, terrifying.
All right, well, before we wrap up this conversation, let's listen to a very informative and super interesting info break.
If you've been inspired by the conversation in this episode, please feel free to reach out and share your creativity and ideas with us and the rest of the community. You can reach us on Facebook and Instagram, or on our subreddit, r/itsamimic. Also, if you're feeling particularly generous, please follow and subscribe, and leave us positive reviews, likes, and comments. Engagements like that help us pop up on search engines and keep this show running.
Before we end this conversation, I want to ask, besides the very clearly obvious one for the Elder Brain Dragon, are there other kinds of minions or creatures that you might expect to find near your own specific draconic monster?
Near the one that we did?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mine's done. But
Yeah. Is there anything besides mind flayers, Peps?
I mean, we talked about like intellect devourers and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just whatever you would find in that community.
Eye drakes, I think not. I don't think this thing wants stuff hanging around too much. I think it would probably rely on other tactics to defend itself, like probably a lot more traps and puzzles and things. I don't think it would want too many minions about.
I love the idea of the fact that it would go out and get kobolds and say, you belong to me now, and bring them back and get them to build all the traps and then fucking kill them.
Yeah, say we can't. You're a loose end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're hired on as contractors, but you're not going to like it when it's time to get paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the Dracohydra, I want to point out, and we kind of brushed over this briefly, not necessarily a minion, but definitely another factor in encountering a Dracohydra is going to be the person that created it. There will be a decently high level spellcaster of some sort nearby that you're probably going to have to deal with either before or after this, especially when you get up to running into this at level 18, 19. You're going to have a mage on top of this in combat, right? So like, you will have not only the Dracohydra to deal with, but also someone hitting you with fireballs at the same time, right? And so the moment you do that, you think, this Dracohydra, which is hard to kill in the first place if you don't know what you're fighting. This is like old school D&D, where like at this point everybody knows fire and acid versus trolls, but back then they didn't. Nobody's gonna know radiant against a Dracohydra, right? So like, you're in trouble, and then you're gonna put a wizard on top of that. Every one of these creatures we've covered today, it can potentially wipe a party off the map.
Yeah,
these are TPKs potentially.
They're all good. I like them all, and that's rare.
Do you guys have a favorite of the ones we talked about today?
Man, it's tough today because I want to use all of them, actually. I mean, probably the one that I'm most excited about is probably the Elder Brain Dragon.
Yeah.
But I love the other
like,
two.
I've been so excited about that one, like, since I opened the book.
The only reason that I was
like...
The only reason that I would pick a Dracohydra over the Elderbrand Dragon is I could put a Dracohydra in any campaign. The Elderbrand Dragon is my villain, right? Like, that's not something I just go, what am I going to do this week, right? It's going to be a major problem.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, that's all for this part of our discussion on monstrous and aberrant cousins of dragons in D&D 5th edition. Please take a second to engage with a like, follow, comment, and a review to help push our engagement. And don't forget to subscribe to find future inspirations for your campaigns.
If you'd like to support us, we have a store with some merch and a donate button on our website, www.itsamimic.com, as well as a Patreon. This episode and others can also be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and most other podcast apps. Thanks for listening to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're gonna get.
This has been an It's a Mimic production. Please check the show notes for this episode to see links, time codes, and credits, and don't forget to reach out and share your own inspirations.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
I am so excited about this episode. I've been excited about it all day.
When I looked at the breakdown last night and I saw Elderbrand Dragon, I was like, fuck yes. I'm so excited.